Just a little more time is all we're asking for. Just a little more time could open doors and doors. Just a little uncertainty can bring it down.
Good evening and welcome to the Never Give Up Show. I am Bailey Smith, your host. Tonight is my 64th podcast. I want to thank all my listeners and my prior guests, my prior listeners. I hope you guys call in 516-531-9643. We have an incredible guest tonight, very, very brave mom coming out and sharing her story. Again, I want to give out a number, 516-531-9643. We are also on right now live blogtalkradio.com/friendstalk, and go to the Never Give Up Show and hit play. The show will also be uploaded to SoundCloud this evening, and wherever I posted the show, I will post the SoundCloud link, and you can also find my show on my website, thenevergiveupshow.com, and go to podcast. I'm going to introduce our guest now, and I'm thankful for her for being my guest. I know these stories are so painful, but they must be heard. I will also post, by the way, she was on Marianne Petrie's show last week on Slam the Gavel. I will add that link to my show later on tonight. So it's important that we bring this out, these stories out, the corruption that is happening, so that somehow we can start little by little disabling it. I don't know how, but I have to believe that somehow we will. Anyway, tonight my guest is Antonella. She says, I'm a protective parent and a mother of two from Rockland County. When I had children, I was the full-time caretaker. I was a stay-at-home mom and a housewife. Before that, I was a dentist for 10 years. My children are my pride and joy, and I was a devoted mother. During the marriage, my ex-husband's focus was on building his career, making money, networking, as well as keeping up with his social status. Then included golf, outings, vacations, social work events, and as well as maintaining his leisure social status. I focused on caring for the kids and their well-being. When I decided I wanted a divorce because his absence, control, and abuse was out of control, my ex-husband then came back at me with the attack, stating I was not good enough to raise the children and parent them. He stated to me that he's going to get full custody and I will be thrown on the street. My ex-husband knew once we were divorced, he would lose all control of me. And he would have to pay a significant amount of child support and maintenance. With that said, my ex-husband, and with the help of his attorney, Kim Rayner, planned out a way to file in the court and attack me with false allegations that I am mentally ill and kept the children from him. When my ex-husband took our divorce to Supreme Court, we were assigned Judge Sherry Eisenpress, a family court judge who is an acting Supreme Court judge with the connections, money, and corrupted judge. My case spiraled for the worse. After 3 years of my divorce proceedings, custody battle, threats to be sent to jail or mental institution, thrown out of the marital home, children taken from me, completely no contact, my parental rights were stripped away. I was legally abused by the judge and the entire organization. And now she's trying to move on with her life and help others. I'm going to bring Antonella on.
Hi.
I can't believe I did that. I printed out my original copy. I forgot to take the name out. Anyway, welcome to the show.
Yeah, I got
a... I'm sorry, do you hear me?
Hi, yes, how are you?
Hey there.
Yep, I am. Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah, yeah. So, welcome, and I hope I didn't botch that introduction.
No, no, it's good, yeah.
It's been a long day.
Yeah,
so
it's okay.
Tell me, how are you doing, Antonella?
I'm hanging in there.
Are you holding up?
I'm hanging in there. I'm, you know, I've become now since with this custody battle and, you know, just spending hundreds and thousands of dollars being court ordered to pay for my children's attorneys and my attorney fees and my ex-husband's attorney fees, you know, I have become pro se. That's a challenge, because I'm not an attorney, but, and my case is in the appellate court because I am appealing everything. And you know, I have now built the courage to now speak out and pretty much, you know, tell my story and spread awareness and be an advocate and supporter for others that are going through the same battles. Throughout this process, I actually have connected with many other victims all over the states. You know, I didn't know how corrupted or how, you know, a family or matrimonial case can turn for the worse to the point where, you know, and until I actually went through it, I had no idea, you know, how corrupted the court system is and the amount of abuse and what they put our children through. I've learned it's become like a business. I mean, it's, you know, it's very upsetting.
Like $80 billion business a year.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's interesting what they did with my case was they started bringing in everyone. You know, not one, but two court-appointed attorneys for my kids. My kids, since it's Supreme Court, you know, they're private paid. You have to pay, you know, so I didn't, not only was I court ordered to pay for one, I had to pay for two, one for my son, one for my daughter. It didn't make sense. You know, they start bringing forensic evaluators and family therapists and parent coordinators and, you know, and, you know, who's connected with who and, the attorneys worked together behind the scene with the judge. There was many times that the judge I have was to have just attorney only conferences. You know, until I was told, until someone actually said, you know, you can deny that. You can say no. I want to be a part of every, you know, every court appearance or every court, you know, virtual court hearing. I finally put my foot down and I put a stop to it because I started to learn that, you know, that these attorneys and the judge were working against me. They were working together. They weren't there for my best interest. Yeah, I had one attorney.
They definitely weren't there for the kids' best interest either.
No, No, they're not.
Right?
In fact, my daughter, I'm sorry, my daughter is a little over 13. She's like 13 and a half. And she's old enough to speak on her behalf. In fact, you know, she has her own phone and she was able to have, you know, access to calling her attorney. And she spoke out, you know, she wrote letters to the judge. My children were brought into court, which is not something that a judge should really do,
mm-hmm.
to get the children so involved,
mm-hmm.
or for the judge to have mm-hmm. such a personal attachment to the case that she's, you know, communicating with my kids. But when my children did try to speak out and say, listen, you know, mom never hurt us. We want to live with mom. You know, things are happening in the home with dad. We're not happy. The judge pretty much silenced them and said, you know, too bad. I don't believe you. You sound like your mother. You need to live with your father. And so that's when, you know, the judge was even, you know, silencing my children, not just me, but my children as well. And like I said, my daughter's at an age where she's able to speak up. My son's 9 and he tried,
right.
But at 13, that's an age where, you know, the child can speak on their behalf and, you know, and any evidence I had, any proof was dismissed and I was punished. And the judge would just take more access away from me. And then when my ex-husband started dating and, you know, and just for the children to call me, you know, they were able to call me, you know, in the evening. And if it interfered with his social time, you know, or what he had to stop what he was doing so the children can, you know, he would have to go home and call me. That was an inconvenience. And so then the judge took my phone calls away. It was just like one thing after another. Anything that I would try to present to the court, anything my children, we were being punished and we were taking away more rights and more acts. And I have a no contact. I haven't been able to see my children in over a year. The children,
so they
actually
have a no contact order against you?
So she kept this, so it was interesting. I had filed an order of protection because my ex-husband was like provoking us, harassing us, and, you know, me and the children. And once the judge was presented with this, you know, my ex-husband, you know, filed a motion to present this in front of the judge because I had filed it in family court. She removed it without even any hearing or anything. And then, so she put, then my ex asked for an order of protection on me. So when that was extended for almost a year, what happened was I work now in the district, you know, I work in a school, I work with children. And I kept telling the judge, you know, listen, I can't have this order of protection, you know, God forbid, you know, I get fingerprinted, you know, this is something that, you know, she then removed that and did like a stay away, no contact. And basically it's
now,
like,
did she ever give you custody access? Did they ever give you an evidentiary hearing based on that?
No.
Like did they?
No, it was, I was in court. My attorney at the time, I did have an attorney at the time, you know, said, listen, Your Honor, you know, it's been a year. She, you know, she has this, you know, order of protection and, you know, she works with children. And so she's like, okay, fine, I'll remove it and I'll just order it's like a city no contact, you know, like when you read the order, it basically is the same as an order of protection.
But what's the reason? Is there a reason?
The reason is that they don't want, the reason is that she is preventing me from having any sort of access and relationship with the children because that's what my ex-husband wants.
No, but
she,
when
I mean,
they,
that's,
when
that's
you,
her, there is
when,
no reason. I'm sorry.
No, what I was going to say is when a judge gives a stay away order or a no contact order or a protective order, there has to be a reason listed. You know, it has to be because they're afraid of you. They fear
none.
For your
there
life.
There is no reason.
And there is no reason. And did you ever have a hearing on it?
No, I wasn't allowed to have a hearing on it. In fact, every time.
I'll tell you why I asked those questions after, but go on. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, I can give you like examples. Like, you know, there's been times that my ex-husband would file a motion and she would cross out, she would not allow me to respond to the to like an order to show cause. She wouldn't allow me to respond and she would say, okay, you know, I want you to come in the courthouse, and then I would just get attacked and she would then attack me and court order, you know, to punish me and you know, she'll say, okay, well, you know, I'm going to court order you to pay for this, or I'm going to, and not allow me to respond to the motions of the order to show cause, which that's not, you know, that's not fair, you know, obviously. In fact, the last contempt motion my ex-husband filed about a year ago, there was a custody settlement. There was a settlement of a 50-50, but I was told I had to go through these phases and all this stuff to get to this 50-50. But in the end, custody was 50-50, joint legal. My ex-husband obviously was doing everything he could to get sole legal custody. And so what he did was he filed a contempt motion stating that I was communicating with my daughter because I have a no contact. The judge then decided to take this contempt motion and turn it into a trial for a custody trial. With that, there was no evidence and they could not put me in contempt. There was no findings that I was even communicating with my child. The judge change custody, giving him sole legal custody with this, you know, with this trial that she decided to, you know, open up another trial to change custody. During those few days of the trial, there was a time where I was trying to get at least some visits or access to the children. My ex-husband was being very difficult about it, and the court reporter stopped recording. You know, we're ending we're ending for the day, and the judge stands up and tells my ex-husband that she's giving him permission to tell the children, "I don't want to see them," just like that, because now they were trying to turn it around, saying I was abandoning the children. That they were on why the judge is going to change custody. So she had to find some excuse. During this trial, she would not accept any of my evidence. She only allowed one witness. I had another witness, because I got reevaluated. They kept saying I was mentally ill. I got evaluated twice by two forensic evaluators. And both reports came out great, you know, no mental illness, no personality disorder, no findings of any mental illness. And when I wanted to have one of the evaluators to testify, you know, to come in and testify, she dismissed it. She said, no, it's too late. You know, she found every excuse.
Was that
did not accept any of my
that?
Evidence. I'm sorry?
Was that the hearing that I was at?
That was no, that one, the one you were on that literally was like 5 minutes. That was when after she changed custody, I filed an appeal, notice of appeal to appeal the custody and the judgment of divorce that the judge signed off on, And the two AFCs, court-appointed attorneys for the children, asked to be removed from the case and the appeal. So that was, they had to file a motion to be heard. And then obviously that was, you know, I could have made my argument to have them removed because they were useless. And that was the one that, you know, I asked for court watchers because that was a virtual, very short,
right.
Quick.
Yeah. I've heard so much about this judge, and when I finally saw her sitting in her home in her messy background,
yeah.
I was like sick to my stomach because I've heard a lot and read a lot about her. And, you know, I know, you know, we'll get to that, but I have Stacey's on the phone and she's, we've been working, she's been helping this woman, Lizzie, that's in jail.
Oh, yes, I know about Lizzie. Yes, I actually.
Yes, so I want to connect you to Stacey because you're.
Okay.
Continue.
Okay,
I'm going to bring Stacey on anyways. Hi, Stacey. How are you?
Hi. Hi, Bailey. Hi, Antonella.
Hi, how are you?
Thank you for calling
Hi.
In.
Hi. Sorry you're going through this.
Antonella, finish what you were just about to say about Lizzie. You said you knew her?
No, I actually, I have tried reaching out. I know Blaise Gomez has been, you know, on top of the case and sort of, you know, updating us because we all feel horrible on what she's going through. But I was reading a few things on her case, and I happened to come across, there was one, you know, stating that her ex-husband's attorney is Dina Kaplan, which I happen to know personally because she was actually my attorney for a very short period of time. So I was like, oh God, what a small world. There's just, unfortunately, you know,
Blaise Gomez is not reporting the truth. And I called her out on it.
Oh, okay.
And
Stacey
does it all the time. I actually had a text conversation with her. I said, why aren't you reporting the truth? We're posting the truth. Because if you look at the show I did on her, there's so many attachments with the real truth, and Stacey will share more. And I have a feeling Judge Eisenpress is connected with this top judge that just stepped down. That's what I was asking about the protective orders. Because all the New York, Stacey's in New York too. And all the New York judges are connected. And,
oh, yeah.
So the problem is that, you know, this, you hit brick walls everywhere with all these judges because there's so much like you just said, you know, her ex-husband's attorney.
You start reading what, you know, everyone's attorneys. I'm like, I know that one. I probably know every attorney in Rockland County because I've been through my, you know, a few of them. I've called, you know, I probably called numerous attorneys just to get even some kind of, like, you know, a free consult just to get some information or some help. Unfortunately,
nobody wants to take the case
together.
Because
no
they
one
know
wants
they
to
can't.
Help. Yep. No, yeah, one,
they
no one wants
together,
to help. The
they
judge.
Won't go up against her. Yeah.
No,
I'm
they
sorry,
won't.
Stacey, what were you going to say?
My suspicion about Blaise is I think she's a genuine victim herself. And so I don't think she would intentionally distort a story, but on the other hand, I think that there is politics involved with the media, and so sometimes it becomes adverse
she's
to your own
what
self.
She wants to report.
To report, right?
I think
plus, she's busy, and she's reporting on a lot of other issues. But the part where I have an issue is where she left Lizzie's story off saying that Lizzie showed up to a hearing and refused a bail reduction hearing. The truth behind that situation was Lizzie had a writ of habeas corpus, which could have let her out of jail with no bail. And instead, the judge insisted on hearing this bail hearing before the writ of habeas corpus, which makes no sense because if a writ of habeas corpus gets you out of jail for free, why would you want to do a bail reduction hearing? Second, this bail reduction hearing, I think, was phony because there's no record of any petition in her case file, her official court record. So it almost seems like it was by design to make Lizzie look crazy and confused by refusing her bail reduction hearing, and kind of Blaze talked to only half of the story and never talked to Liz or Liz's perspective and dropped the story there. And in fact, you know, Lizzie is fully competent, knew what she was doing when she said her writ of habeas corpus should take precedence to the bail reduction hearing. And the judge said, do you think you're a lawyer? You're going to do what I say, and I'm remanding you back to jail, and there's no hearing on your writ or your bail hearing.
Yep, so, that's what they do.
Yeah, so that's what really happened. And then she really hasn't picked up the story from there, but I continue to post on her story to give updates. Just the other day was a recorded conversation between her and her law guardian where she was asking him to post her bail, and he was basically acting like a cat and mouse chase and not even treating her like a human being. But so, you know, there's more to the story than what is being reported. And can a reporter report every single thing too? No, but my problem is she left it off making Lizzie look crazy for refusing her bail reduction hearing when it may not have even been a actual legitimate petition before the court. Now, this is your story, though, and this is your time, and this is your time to shine and tell your story. And the reason I called in for you, Antonella, is you did the appeal, but did you ever do a federal injunction? Because clearly this is the way you're describing it. Sounds like gross violations of your constitutional rights, where a federal injunction may help you.
Yes, I'm preparing that. You know, I'm trying to do the best I can. I'm no attorney. You know, Lizzie definitely sounds more educated, and she just, you know, I'm just this, you know, ordinary person trying to do this.
Stacy's been
a little bit of help.
I'm ordinary too, sweetheart, and we all learn.
Yeah. So I'm preparing that. You know, just recently the judge I had filed. So once the custody was changed and I filed for the appeal, my daughter was reaching out to me, you know, just saying, you know, she wanted to kill herself and she's not supposed to, but she still tries to reach out. And I filed a petition in the family court because I'm like, okay, well, now, you know, I can take this to family court. And once I did that, I had a help from a probation officer to help me. And once I did that, the family court, I kept calling them and I said, what's going on? You know, I never, you know, I see it stamp, you know, you stamped it that it was filed, but you know, I'm waiting. The family court then was by Supreme Court to give them the case back up to them, back to the Supreme Court. I had to appear in court, and I was then, the judge then issued a gatekeeper in Supreme Court and Family Court. So my case that I filed, so the petition that I filed in Family Court was never heard in Family Court. And the judge took it back to her and then filed a gatekeeper, not only in Supreme Court, but Family Court. I don't know if you know what a gatekeeper is. I didn't know at first. I was a little confused. But basically, a gatekeeper is I'm permitted to file any motions, order to show cause, petitions without permission from the judge. So the judge then either grants it or dismisses it. She has the authority to
to grant the motion or petition, whatever I want to file. So that's her control. So basically, I'm trying to file, you know, petitions for on behalf of my daughter's well-being, and obviously the judge is not interested in what my daughter's feeling and what she's, you know, what she's thinking and what she's stating, saying, you know, I'm unhappy with this decision. I don't want this. I don't want to live here. I feel like dying. I want to kill myself. That wasn't,
you
did know.
Did you call CPS?
That was, I did.
Not that they are much help over there.
So, I you know, I didn't know what to do because, like I said, there's a no contact. I can't, you know, communicate with the kids. I can't call my ex. I can't do anything. We don't have, you know, I don't have an attorney. We don't have a parent coordinator. No one's there. We don't have a therapist. So, at this point, CPS had to get involved. But, you know, what did they do? My ex-husband, you know, tells them, oh, you know, this is, you know, gives them the whole spiel, the whole story. You know, she's just doing it for attention. She's fine. You know, she wants to see her mother. Her mother doesn't want to see her. You know, all these things. CPS didn't really do much. I even tried reaching out
no,
to the regional. And the regional, you know, in Westchester, the regional department, and they got nasty with me. They didn't really... You know, they all work. It's the same thing. They all work together. They all work with the
yeah.
judges.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they all know the judges. I don't know if they see other cases that they feel they need to be more, you know, attentive to. But when it comes to your child, you know, you want them to investigate it or look into it, you know, as if any other case. But they didn't really do much, CPS. So, I mean, at that point...
So I was thinking about... Yeah, go on. I'm sorry.
No, that's really it. Yeah, they didn't really do much.
So I was thinking if you go online and maybe in one of the links I put, if you Google Sherry Eisenpress, you could see... her cases.
Yeah,
and I would reach out to as many moms or dads that lost their kids in this kind of way through her, as her being the judge, and start a class action suit against her. That's what people are starting to do all over the United States.
Yes, and I have. I've reached out to other victims with this, you know, that have the same judge. But, you know, this judge is one of, she is just.
She's so powerful. I know.
She's, yes. So a lot of victims don't want to come out. They don't want to talk about it.
Even,
some of them say. Yeah, some of them
even
will
to
tell
do a
me,
class action.
Yes, some of them will.
Can
say,
I speak to that?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I have the Facebook group Erie Niagara Dishonorable Honorables and Other Notorious Notables. It's a long name, but
I'll
post
invite
the
her
dirty.
To it.
Yeah, I post the dirty on all the judicial misconduct in our area. And it's not anything that I'm making up. I'm posting like the literal stories that made the news and that are published. And I transcripts from my own case. You know, you don't want to protect your ex's last name. But unfortunately it's the same last name as your kid. So you have to protect his name in it too. So I redact mm-hmm. his name. I redact my kid's name and I post the truth and I post official transcripts. I post a transcript of the judge telling me that he called my kids' counselors, told them to ignore any past or ongoing medical evidence of sexual abuse by their father. He spoke that to the record. He told me that if I discuss any more concerns, even though I'm a medical provider for 23 years, told me that if I speak any more concerns to my children's counselors, he's going to hold me in contempt and throw me in jail. So that's witness tampering. And I put the truth out there. I put the official transcript that shows I'm not just, you know, hearsay speaking of what the judge did. I'm literally putting the transcript out there. You can't deny the spoken words under oath from the bench. And, you know, people who are so afraid to speak need to understand, as long as you're putting the truth out there, you're okay. It's well,
right.
You should even be able to put your kids' names and not feel shame, because the reality is kids didn't ask to be abused, so why would society look at them in any certain way? They're the heroes, right? It's the perpetrator that should wear the egg on their face, but it's this
right.
weird thing, you know, that if you put your kids' names out there, you know the court's going to use that as a means to punish you, and you want to keep your voice, so I redact the names for that reason, because otherwise they'll be shut up very quickly.
Right.
You know, and if I can have that page and I'm, you know, knock on wood, praise God, hope to God, I'm okay, then others can do it too, and others should start doing it in their community.
I know. I mean, I agree. I mean, I've even pages, if anyone's ever had, you know, a case with, you know, the same judge, you know, please message me. I have reached out to other victims that I know personally. They don't want to, you know, come out. You know, we live in a very small county.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone knows everyone. I had to file something in at the clerk's office today, and I look over and I see, I'm like, wait, when did she start working here? I see this one person who's very good friends with my ex-husband, and I'm like, oh, great. And I'm trying to ask a question, and she then gets up and starts walking, you know, all, you know, she's all like, you know, ignoring me with the, like, I get this look, and she's like, walks by, you know, and I finally had to say, listen, I need to stop. I can't speak right now. There's this, you know, there's a conflict of interest here. I just, in the morning, I felt very uncomfortable. I didn't feel. And then I said to myself, oh gosh, like, can she actually go through my file? Like, can she go into my, you know, NYSIP account and, yeah, and start looking at,
she
and
can
I'm
do whatever
like, oh,
she wants.
Right.
Yeah.
She can. And I was just like, I that's how small the county is. It's like, you
yeah.
can't go anywhere without, you know, running
good.
Into someone.
Good.
You know,
because when you speak your words, they're going to be heard. It's not like you're speaking into, you know, this vast pool of people, and they're not going to know who or what you're talking about. They're going to know who and what you're talking about. Remember, first of all, I think the fact that talking about abuse being taboo in society, I think that that is a cultural thing that has
mm-hmm.
been created
mm-hmm.
by perpetrators
mm-hmm.
because silence is a perpetrator's best friend. You've got to speak up.
Mm-hmm.
People who
right.
are staying quiet by their inaction are condoning this abuse that's happening to you and to
right.
me and to
they're
other
the flying
people.
Monkeys.
Yeah. So if you're being
right.
quiet,
the flying
about
monkeys
it,
and enablers.
You're helping it along.
Right.
Well, and then that's
right.
why the judge tries to silence me and the children, because the more we do speak up and tell the truth and you know, prove that what's happening is wrong. They don't like that. They don't want that to come out. They don't want that to, so what do? They silence you. They, you know, court order you for this or to punish you. And that's how my case has been. I mean, you know, the judge will just put out an order to punish me without my ex-husband even giving any evidence. You know, she then put out an order for no contact with the, you know, speaking with any of the doctors and the therapists and, you know, all because he made this, you know, allegation that I was harassing everyone. I mean, I know the dentist. I know my children's dentist. I'm friends with her. You know, when I reached out and said, you know, is there any harassment, you know, going on? You know, am I harassing you? They're like, no. So, you know, when the judge said, okay, well, do you have the emails? You know, because he's like, I'm getting emails. And he's like, kind of like shuffling on his phone. He's like, well, I can't pull it up right now. He's like, okay, fine. You know, without even showing any evidence that there, like, where, show me the email that there's harassment, that I'm harassing, or that they're reaching out to you saying that I'm harassing you, because they're telling me no, you know, but it's like, it's his word against mine. And just just by him just saying that, you know, he'll say, I want her punished. I want, you know, the new thing now is he has to pay me maintenance. So he's been asking the judge to court order me to pay for his attorney fees. And then what he tells her is to remove it. So he'll say, I'll just remove it out of the maintenance. So he doesn't have to pay me maintenance. And I'm entitled to that. But because he has control of him, that he has control of that, that he, you know, he's the one who, you know, he's supposed to transfer it into my, you know, my account. Because he has control of that, he's able to, you know, not pay for maintenance. And then, you know, you try to appeal all these things. You know, you go in and you appeal, and it takes time. It's a process. And then, you know, and so all this time is going by, you know, removing money out of my maintenance, you know. And so, you know, before you know it, you know, you're just, you know, you're broke, you know, you're being abused by the system. The judge feels entitled. She feels untouchable. You know, they have immunity. And even after just filing complaints,
they have immunity
like,
up to, they have immunity up to 200. I think they have to have a $250,000 bond. So that's why if there's a class action suit, there's what to go after. But it's also, it's bringing all the people together who've been hurt, and the children that have been destroyed, and the families that have been broken by this horrific monster out there.
Yeah.
The more articles pop up when you put her name out there, you know, she's been investigated by the FBI 2 times. You know,
yes,
in Rockland County, she is owned. I don't care to say this. She is owned by the Hasidic Jews. She is owned by rabbis. She's owned by the mafia. She's owned by drug dealers. They are paying her fancy lifestyle.
Yes.
Okay. And she just nobody ran against her. She just got reelected for another 10 years.
No, she got reelected as a family court judge, even though she's an active Supreme Court judge. She ran as a family court judge, and all she had to do was get her signatures to get on the ballot. And since no one ran against her, she automatically did as for another 10 years. And then recently, she got nominated to the 9th Judicial District or the 9th District, which then I think allows her to practice as a judge a longer term, because I believe Supreme Court judges, right? Just correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe Supreme Court judges are able to stay on the bench a little longer than a family court judge. Am I correct? I think that's how it works. I think they have up until a certain age that they have to retire. She got reelected again, you know, without any competition.
I've seen all the judges. I've seen horrific. Okay. But the stories I've heard about her, and I lived in Rockland. I grew up in Rockland. I moved back there as a married person. Okay, Rockland changed a lot.
It did. I grew up in Rockland.
So, it changed. But there's so much money and power within Rockland County and every part of it that. You know, it's all connected. It's all one big, huge connection. And like I said, it's rabbis, it's mafia.
I
want to
add.
It's every
mafia
out
add,
there.
Right. And I want to add she has a lot of connections with the attorneys, so she has her hands on civil cases, matrimonial cases, and juvenile criminal cases. So she's in front of these attorneys. These attorneys are in front of her on many different cases, and they want to win their cases. So, you know, trying to defend me and trying to get, you know, to defend my, you know, my rights and get my children back, I'm a nobody to them because I'm just one of many cases that, you know, and they look at me and said, well, I got to go in front of her a few times a week, you know, because I have a criminal case with her, I have a civil case with her, and I have a matrimonial case with her. So that's where she gets the control. Then I was told that, you know, my friend was like looking her up on donations. And I was looking donations, and people are donating $4,000 and $5,000. And, you know, then this attorney is donating this amount. And then, you know, you see attorneys donating.
What are they donating? Where are they?
Can I comment?
On the board?
You can speak.
Good job doing your research there on the campaign contribution.
Yes.
For New York State, I'm going to send Bailey the link so if other people are listening and they want to research their case and who's connected to who and who contributes to who and how much, for people who live in New York State, I'm going to give you the link and Bailey, you can post it, okay?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. First of all, isn't that a conflict of interest for lawyers? And people that have cases with her to donate to her
campaign.
The judicial rule on that is if any of the parties contributed more than $150 to their campaign within the past, it's got to be recent, like 3 to 5 years, something like that, they have to disclose it. If they fail to disclose it, they can be in trouble for that. In terms of conflict of interest is unfortunately written in a way that they can ignore it, because what it says is if a reasonable attorney looked at the situation, would the reasonable attorney think that this is conflict of interest? So they all say, I'm a reasonable attorney and I don't see it. But if you go to judicial ethics and disclosure of campaign funds and so forth, it's over $150. You can find in their canon of ethics that they have to disclose it, and if they fail to, you can put them in trouble for that.
Well, that's one of the things, if I'm not mistaken, that I posted that she was investigated for
embezzling money.
Contribution,
so it was like embezzlement. Yeah.
I mean, something. There was,
yeah.
I believe there was proof, and she got off. And then, you know, there was another case with the Orthodox Jewish radio show used the FBI sting. Rockland County legislator once Eisenpress donations probed. I mean, there's all this stuff on this woman. And like I said,
but yet she still behaves the way she does. What does that tell you? I mean, there's articles. You look her up.
No, it's not even that she. It's not even that she behaves the way she behaves. She's still on the bench, and she was just put. And she was just reelected because no one would go up against her because people are scared of her. She has so much friggin' power, and that's because of the backings that she has. She's extremely well connected, like I said, to every single kind of mafia, the Jewish one, the drug one, the, you know, every single, you know, organization outside the inside, not including the inside organization, but the outside organizations, and she's living a very, very nice life in, you know, upstate New York, you know, whatever. I'm not going to say where. I'm sure people can find her. But, you know,
yeah,
she's living this, and she's destroyed hundreds of families.
Yeah, she destroyed a lot of children. I have friends that have told me that they've lost their relationship with their children. Children don't speak to them anymore, you know, as they, you know, because of because of her removing the child completely out of the one parent's life for so many years. Eventually the child starts to, I was talking to someone today and he was saying that it's called a, I forgot the name, how he phrased it. But it's like that survival mode that they become like, well, I have to pick the good parent and the bad parent now. Like they separate themselves from it. They're so damaged. And so, you know, people say as the child gets older, they don't speak to the one parent because of, you know, and it's heartbreaking because I would never have known who Judge Sherry Eisenpress was until I was, my case went in front of her. And who does she think, you know, she knows nothing about me, and now she thinks it's okay to destroy, you know, I wanted these children. I took care of these children. Now you're going to just take them away and you're going to remove them from my life completely. I actually, and I mentioned this in the, you know, in Marianne Petrie's podcast last week. And I was telling her, you know, one of the attorneys I had, during my case, he basically told me she's my God, that Judge Sherry, she's my God now, and that I have to obey this God. Said, really? I said, that's, you know, she's not my God. I didn't choose for her to be my God. You know, I have a God. She's not my God. I said, you know, but I was taken back because I was like, wow, you must see this a lot. You must see, you know, the lives and the so many families that she's destroyed that you're calling her God. I mean, that's a little, you know, I was just a little taken back. But it was kind of a scary feeling when he said, she's my God now. Like, it was almost like, this is going to be your life now.
And because, you know, right, because now he owes her for whatever she gave him or whatever.
Right,
you know,
but
it was a scary
feeling that this woman completely changed. She destroyed my life. She destroyed my children's lives. Children are damaged for life. They will never recover. You know, they say, oh, children are resilient. No, they're not. They're not resilient. They're going to be damaged. They're going to have a lot of issues growing up as adults. Not just as children, but as adults.
I could tell you that, and I didn't go through family court. My kids just witnessed abuse. And I could tell you for a fact, I'm dealing with young adults with high ACE scores, which is adverse childhood experiences and trauma, basically. And they're young adults. They should be living, thriving, happy, healthy,
right.
And there's physical and mental issues. And they've gotten help for years, and it's not over. You know, what my prayer is that their brains are not fully developed and they still have more time, I hope, at least for my oldest, you know,
right.
Because I know what happens to these kids. And it could be so much, so much worse. I know from my kids what it's like. And it's hell. It's every day. Now, I'm thankful I have my kids in my life. Okay? They're all home. I'm a single mother. It is not easy.
Right.
You know, two of them were out, were gone, and then they just came back home. And it is very, very difficult. So this is why I fight, because I fight for all your children so you don't have to end up having to deal with this. And I believe Sherry Eisenpress is the Hitler of our generation. And I know there's so many bad judges out there, but from like I wrote, the untouchable judge, she is literally untouchable. There's no one that will fight up against her. Like we were just saying, you know, why won't people come forward and put together a class action suit, at least at least, if nothing, if anything, at least her name will be known all over, right?
Right.
And people are scared. I mean, they've already lost their kids, their lives were destroyed, and they're still scared. That's the fear that has been put into so many people. And I know I could say this for 100%, she is paid.
A lot of people say that she gets paid under the table. Right under the table. And I wouldn't be surprised that my ex-husband paid her.
I'm sure he did. Or his
attorney. You know, and I get, not only do I get treated by the judge, but her law clerk isn't any, you know, she's very nasty. And, you know, she happens to actually know my ex-husband. You know, they graduated, they didn't graduate in the same high school, but same year, and they have mutual friends. And at first I felt like it was a conflict of interest, but, you know, I was always told, you know, how do you prove it? How do you prove it? Okay, they know each other, or they might have, but that's hard to prove. But, you know, I do believe that she helps out. She helps, you know, my ex-husband and his attorney. You know, every time I try adjourn, if I need to adjourn, you know, or I request to change a date or whatever, I'm never accommodated. But then when my ex-husband, you know, he can't make a date or he needs to adjourn, so it right away it's accepted. Okay, sure. When can you come? Oh, you know, when do we need to change the date? When do we have to, you know, the court date? You could see the favoritism, the, you know, accommodating him versus me. And that's been a challenge. And it's like, how do you,
it's all about bringing people together who have gone through the same exact thing and speaking up. And what Stacey and I say, and I'm going to bring Sandra on in a minute. She's another friend. We say is power in numbers. You know, people have to go out there and start just protesting and opening up their mouths or starting. Stacey, do you need an attorney to file a class action suit? Is she there?
I don't.
It's a double-edged sword, really, because the judges are pretty lawless and they do whatever they want. It's really Lord of the Flies.
Right.
So if you don't have a judge, they're going to treat you like, here's this little barking chihuahua, a group of barking chihuahuas, you know, and they're still just going to do what they want with their predetermined narrative and shove you along. And if you go in with an attorney, the attorney is going to have career pressures basically to throw your case. So it's really a difficult task, but it's been done, and and people have exercised that right. I sued a judge, but basically the best benefit from that I got is he recused.
Okay. When you sued, though, it was in Supreme Court, right? You know, some people say, go to federal court,
sued in federal. And it did get the judge to recuse, which would be a benefit to your case. But, you know, then they put their successors. They're all echo chambers. The successors are all echo chambers to the first judge anyway. It's almost like you have to get a change of venue. I've been through 5 or 6 judges that I've gotten recused. But the basic thing is
well, that's my goal,
you know, you don't want to send a message that this is you don't want to send a message that this is all like Mission Impossible, because it is Mission Possible. But what happens is every step of the way, you know, you lose. But each time you show that no matter how much you lose, you're still going back, it shows them that you're not going to give up and you're going to be annoying, and best to just give you some of what you want. to shut you up and move on to somebody else that they're so controlling of.
Right.
So keep doing what you're doing, even if you lose each time, because it has a cumulative effect of showing the court that you're not giving up and you're going to be annoying until they give you what you want. And it may not be all of what you want, but at least you get something. And then that something is usually a building block to something more, too.
Right. It's very, very difficult. What's also challenging is that my ex-husband is, you know, such a narcissist and controlling and has a lot of connections that, you know, it's been a struggle even, you know, in the community I grew up in. He has successfully, you know, had people in the community to go against me.
I've learned, sweetheart, if you don't mind my saying this, I've learned that when a man acts like a victim to, mm-hmm. especially a woman with such a benign voice, and he's such a terrible victim to this woman with a very benign voice,
mm-hmm.
he's got to be such a weenie. Like, you got to go and cower and, oh, I need this protection and that protection from this very benign, motherly, kind woman.
Right. You know, he told me, you know, straight up, basically saying, not only am I going to ruin your life, I'm going to ruin everything about it. And it was a struggle. You know, I had to start from the ground up. Literally, I got thrown out of the house. I'll never forget it. I was in court. They basically told me, you're not going back and you're not going to say goodbye to your children and you're not, you know, you're going to have supervised visits and you can only see them 6 hours a week. And I was like, what? And I remember all I had was, you know, I walked out with just the clothes on my body and the car I was driving, and he was even trying to take that away from me. Thankfully, I have family here living in the county. And I was a stay-home mom. I didn't work for over 10 years. You know, we were in a pandemic. I didn't have, like, you know, a job. And I had to figure out how to the car without a cosigner. I had to figure out, okay, I need to get a job. Okay, I need to, you know, I need to get a home for my children. I need to get a place to live. I didn't have any cosigners. They were looking at me like, well, how are you going to afford a mortgage? Like, I don't ask how I did it, but I think the drive and just thinking of my children and, you know, and it was like almost my children gave me that strength. And every time I tried, you know, I did get the job or the house, he would take me to court and he would try to sabotage if it was where I was working, you know, just purchasing a home or anything. And so it was hard. It was very hard. But, you know, one advice, I want to tell everyone that's going through this, like, just don't give up. Just keep going. Don't, you know, like I said, there was a point in my life where I was embarrassed to walk, and walk around and go to a local grocery store. Who knows what was being said about me. You know, my daughter, I remember crying, telling me, you know, there was talk about in her school that the school psychologist was telling her, you know, is your mom on drugs? You know, why can't you see her? You know, people walking around in the school, you know, I know a lot of teachers there saying, you know, is this true? Is mom crazy? You know, he was saying horrible things about me. But I would just say, do I know the truth? And the people that know me know the truth. And if anyone ever wants to hear my side of the story, I'm willing to tell it. And that's it. And that's all you can do. You can't allow these people or, you know, my ex-husband, you know, to control your life forever. Because by me allowing that to affect me, he still has that control. And I refuse for him to continue to control me. So, you know, but it's been a battle. It's been a struggle.
I'm gonna bring Sandra on, and I'm also gonna give out
Our phone number, 516-531-9643. Feel free to call in and join our show. Welcome, Sandra.
Hi there.
Sorry, I came on a little bit late. Came on a little bit late tonight.
It's okay, you came on.
So
it's okay, but you came on.
I did, and a lot of credit to her name is Antonella.
Antonella.
And very courageous. It sounds very
Thank
similar
you.
To my story. And it was very difficult to do, but no regrets at all. So I'm 57, so I'm probably older than you. And I deal with a real difficult medical condition. So it was even harder to do it because I had personal limitations and a daughter with a disability. So in preparation, I don't think any of us really prepare to do it. It's underlined. We think about it, but to take that action is really hard because you're on your own, even if there's family or whatever. And no regrets at all. I'm now going into the fifth year of court, and Sunny today was helping me with my temporary restraining order, which is going into December, my eighth or ninth court appearance. So it's tough. They try to intimidate you. They try to find your weaknesses, because for all of us, it's all of our kids. And then it's money, you know, trying to live. And we just have to be resilient. And it's hard to do if you don't have a little tribe. And doing it on your own is real hard, real hard. But you got to have people along the way to hold your hand, and then maybe that person 6 months or 8 months from that point in time, there's another person and then another person, and you just keep hanging on and you keep pushing forward. It's, you hear a lot of women who give up, and the ones that are on this podcast just don't, we won't stop. And I won't, I won't for myself and I won't for other women. I will encourage, I will help, I will advise. But I won't discourage.
Right. Yeah. So no, I agree. It is hard. And sometimes you do feel alone. You know, you know, there's people that say, oh, you know, I'm here for you if you need anything. And then when you know, you do need, you know, that supporter, you know, they shy away, or they're just like, well, I don't want to get too involved, or, well, you know. And you do, you feel like you're doing it all alone and it's hard, but you know, like you said, you know, you don't give up, you do it for yourself or for your kids, you know, and for other victims. And that's, I guess, by not giving up is what's giving me the strength going, you know, and, you know, I refuse to give up on my kids. I feel like if I do stop, you know, doing what I'm doing, that means I did give up on them. That means maybe, you know, when the judge says, oh, you know, giving them, you know, you've abandoned your kids. Yeah. By not fighting. Yeah. Maybe you could say I abandoned them, but what I'm doing, you know, I'm doing everything I can to fight for my kids, you know, like, so, but.
I'm sorry, I keep interjecting, but I have something else to add here because I think I'm a little bit ahead of you in stages. I do have contact with my children, and you know, and thank God your daughter, she knows that all this unlawful stuff is happening and she reaches out to you anyway too. That communication is so important because she's going to see in the instant that she talks to you, even 2 seconds, she knows you're fighting for her and you care for her. And that's so important, especially when the creepy judge says that it's okay for your ex to tell your child that you don't care about her. But what's going to happen is your children are going to be curious. And I know this because this is what happened in my situation. And they're going to they're going to sneak into their father's phone, and they're going to read texts between the father and the attorney for children, because they're going to want to know what's going on without asking their father. And then they're going to start seeing things come in the mail that you served him. And they're going to start reading the court papers when the father's not looking.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to start making sense of the situation and putting pieces of the puzzle together. That's the stage that my kids are at. And it will happen for you too. Keep that communication as precious and as little as it is, it's precious. And use that time to show her that it's a lie, that you don't care about her. And don't give up on your children. Don't give up on your children. Keep going. Because my kids know I never stopped, because they started reading the papers themselves. They found a way to get the papers without their father knowing, and they did that on their own. So they know what's going on. And
well, my that's not your fault. Experience. My children actually, especially my daughter, knows what's going on. I mean, my children got to experience being in the courtroom, and she has. There was a few times. I'll give you one example. She witnessed, you know, my ex-husband was saying, kept saying I was saying inappropriate things, and then I started recording everything and to remove FaceTime, and I'll never forget it. My children were brought in the courtroom, and there were so many times they were brought in. There was one time where my ex was obviously trying to remove FaceTime, so she had said, "Okay, well, I'm gonna start Zoom calls." And I remember, you know, the everything was done, and we were sort of kind of, you know, standing up, we were in the courtroom, and my daughter overhears the judge lean over to my ex-husband's attorney and whispers, like leaning over and whispering. My daughter happens to be standing like very close by, and she's very observant. She's a smart girl, whispering to my ex-husband's attorney to record the Zoom calls as if she was going to, they were going to find one little thing. They were going to, she's whispering to her to record it, right? Sure enough, you know, they did. My ex-husband provoked my daughter, got her all upset. She gets on. I kept asking her, is everything okay? What's happening? You know, she refused to talk because she knew he was standing behind the door. And I kept asking her, is everything okay? Please talk to me. You know, what happened? You know, are you upset? Why are you upset? They kept saying that I was causing trauma and that the judge removed all phone calls, that I was causing drama because I kept asking her, you know, what happened? Why are you upset? And that was her way of removing calls. But the fact that my daughter overheard this judge go ahead and start whispering, she right there saw where, you know, who was favoring who, which parent. I was also told my children were brought in court because I was told that I had to tell my children, this is what they wanted me to tell them on the record, and I refused, that mommy's not well, mommy needs to get better, and that you need to live with your dad. These were things that, you know, that were happening. Like, I was just like, you know, and of course I was like, no, I'm very well. I'm fine. You know, I refuse to put that on the record. You know, my kids had witnessed, you know, in the courtroom, just the way my ex-husband's attorney behaved and how she was bad-mouthing me, you know, in court. So, you know, she would overhear conversations between his attorney and you know, my ex-husband and his attorney. She would, you know, same thing. They were seeing that the father was doing everything he can to prevent from them seeing their mother. There was a few times he's told my daughter, you know, I'm not going to allow you to see your mom. You know, sometimes he would want her to do something or something would happen, and he would threaten her and say, you know what, I'm not going to allow you to see your mom, you know. Yeah, so my children know. They, you know, and that was the thing, you know. I think that the courts, they were hoping that the children would eventually go against me. But because of what they've witnessed and what they've seen,
my children know very well that, you know, they see what's happening and what their father is doing. And I was a very devoted mom, and we had, me and my children had a very strong bond. So that's definitely a bond that they'll never break. So yeah, I mean, it is to that, I mean, but my kids know, and thank God they know, you know, maybe they had to, you know, I'm glad that they, I mean, it's no child should be brought into court and being dragged into this whole mess. But at the same time, by witnessing what was really happening, they were able to see the truth, you know?
I think,
sorry,
I hope
I'm not
talking
too much.
I think that this, I think with this description that you just said, with your children witnessing these things and knowing what the real truth is, I think you can rest assured your children are inoculated with the truth. And that
yes.
inoculation, everyone's against vaccines, but in this instance, your children witnessing a judge speaking ex parte and telling people to record something when all the rest of the world can't report, we're damned if we record anything.
Right.
And my kids too. They know what they told their attorney for children, and the attorney for children argued against their wishes. They know it. And they know their father's a lawyer, and they know the connections there that he got to basically kidnap them. So when your kids are inoculated with the truth and the love that they know that you gave them for so many years, this is not going to work out well for your ex. And children,
right.
unfortunately, do grow up fast, but as they grow up, though, the truth is going to become more and more damning for your ex.
Right. I agree. Yes.
I think that's the same thing. You know, going into 5 years now, I have, you know, young men. They're 25, 23, 19, and Elizabeth's 14. So when they've had altercations with their father, you know, he blames me for brainwashing them. And it's like, no, they're adults now. And whatever we have done when they've been younger, we now are going to see the learning and everything that we've been trying to do with the kids, whether even going through the divorce or not, is making them strong individuals. And that's hard to do because you have to be selfless. And putting the kids first many times, at least in, you know, with a lot of instances that have happened with me and health-wise, they start learning to cope. And they will do what they need to do amongst even themselves as siblings to support each other, whether it's financially, emotionally, and being that I have three boys and, you know, and then Elizabeth, they really rally with each other. And the one thing they don't really talk about with each other is their father. They have no conversation with each other about him. And when this restraining order went on with my 23-year-old father and then his father putting it on him, you know, it was a little bit comical in the courtroom today because the judge just kind of said, okay, you know, what's going on here? And the only one that didn't have a restraining order on my ex was me, which was really funny because I'm the primary person. So, you know, when you, these kids start growing up, you start seeing, okay, you know, they're all right. And I know you said, Bailey, that, you know, they're always going to have scars, and that's true. But whether it's scars from a divorce or scars from, you know, some kids get bullied and things like that, I think we all have to contend with something. And it's resiliency.
I think there's different, every scenario is different. You know,
sure.
Children that are brainwashed and turned against another parent when they're at a young age, but witness domestic violence, that's a war zone. And those you have the same kind of scars as being at war. That's what I was referring to. Now, you know, in your case, it may be different. And, you know, in Antonella's case, you know, let's pray, you know, that they didn't witness, you know, the abuse. They witnessed things in court, which, who brings children into court? That is, like, the most not unacceptable thing. I mean, if
there was a point where she brought my children behind, like, I think she wanted to continue the judge wanted to continue the court case. I forgot what she wanted to do, and she didn't want the children there, so she put them in the back by themselves, and they locked the door. And all you hear, I can hear my son was, like, freaking out. My son, you know, he was, like, 8 or 9. He's 9 now. I think he was 8 at the time. And you could hear him trying to get out. And I'm sitting there, and I'm like, what are you doing? You're like, torturing my kids. Like, you locked them in a room. They don't know what's going on. There's not an adult with them. They're by themselves. My son's trying to get out. And you could hear, and she's like kind of, like, left. She's like, what's going on back there? Are they okay? Maybe go check on them. Like, it was like a joke for her. And I'm like, I can't even believe you're dragging my children. This is just unlawful. Like,
I'm sorry, go on.
Yeah, I just was, like, sitting there. I had my attorney with me. My attorney's not saying anything. They're not doing anything. I'm like, is this even normal? Like, is this something that usually happens? Like, is this something that usually,
you
know?
She has a history of bringing children into the courtroom. But normally when you bring a child, you go by, and first of all, they have to be a certain age. And then second of all, they do it in the chambers. And usually the attorney, the guardian litem or attorney for the children is there. They don't bring them into
the
courtroom. I mean,
and there's supposed to be a stenographer in there, and if there isn't, imagine what they could be saying to your child. They're not supposed to do an in-camera without a stenographer to keep a record. Also, girls, I just want to add one more thing, because this is the Never Give Up show, right? Let's not say everyone's going to, you know, emerge from this totally scarred and just this, you know, grave prognosis.
Let's pray.
Because in trauma, there's also post-traumatic growth just as much as there's PTSD. And I embrace for my children that they're having this opportunity to learn not to trust everybody. Because I entered my situation being too naive and trusting so many people. And there is a balance to learning who to trust and not to trust so you don't get yourself into bad situations. So just as much as there may be scars, there's going to be growth, wisdom, priorities, and things that they emerge with that other children who haven't been tested won't grow to learn.
Right.
And I agree with that. And I do go along with having support, you know, for the kids. Whether it's an aunt, an uncle, you know, somebody where they can turn to. And it's tough because a lot of people work, they're not available, they don't pick up, the phone or send the kids a card in the mail. Very rarely do you get, you know, that kind of support system for the kids. And about a year and a half ago, my mother passed, and both of my parents are from Italy. And my mother was just with the kids going through this whole thing with them. And my sister who lives in New York was coming into Buffalo a lot. And it's important because they want to feel secure. And abandonment, the research shows too, that abandonment has far more effect than actual death. And the kids were abandoned.
Yep.
And, you know, all of a sudden, you know, you're working with your father for the past 7 to 8 years, and all of a sudden, nothing, you know, zero, no calls, no texts.
Right.
And I think for boys, I don't know the research for boys and girls, but for boys, it's tough. They emulate that. They
my son
look up
is
to.
Acting out, and my daughter is more emotional. She and my son is acting out. And, you know, it's funny when you mentioned abandonment, you know, and you're, I guess you're saying your ex, no phone calls, no. That's sort of what they're trying to play out for me. I can't call them. So they're thinking, no phone calls, no contact, why doesn't mommy want to see, you know. And my ex-husband having approval of the judge to tell them, oh, I the judge told me I could tell them that their mom abandoned them. They're setting that up as if I did abandon them. They're making that happen when I don't want to. Like I was in court and trying to remove this gatekeeper, and of course the judge punishes me again and files, you know, and court orders, you know, for me to pay my ex-husband's, you know, attorney fees again. And you know, I'm trying to see my kids again, and you know, she stated on the record that my ex-husband will pay for these, you know, it's on the record. He'll pay for your visits or whatever it is. So I'm like, okay, great. So the only, right now I can't contact him, and I contact his attorney, because I'm pro se, and I've been contacting her, and she's refusing. She's like, nope, he's not paying, and she's refusing for me to see the children. She's basically saying, no, please stop, leave me alone. You're harassing me.
Could you file a contempt?
Well, that's the thing, you know. Yeah, I mean, that's going to be the next step. You know, I have to file something. I mean, I took a snapshot of the pic, you know, of a picture of where it states, you know, that the judge stated that, you know. Yes, you could see them, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And she's still refusing for me to see the children. But, you know, you file a contempt. Okay, I have this gatekeeper. So, I mean, the judge right now filed contempt against this attorney to the judge. What do you think is the judge, how is the judge going to react to that?
What allowed this horrific monster of a judge, I'm sorry, I can't even say her name, and I can't even call her human, but what made her decide that all of a sudden you could see your kids?
The judge kept changing, you know, when I could see the kids, what days, hours, because, you know, my ex-husband would say, oh, I have this going on, I have that. And so it was left off after she changed custody that, I don't know, figure it out. Maybe you could see them for a couple of hours and, you know, on this day or that day. But she had court ordered that I still had to pay supervised visits and all that. She refuses to remove the supervised visits. And I spent thousands of dollars. I'm broke. I mean, I'm barely paying my bills. So, you know, I'm pro se. And I'm trying to explain to the judge, I can't pay for these visits. We have to figure something out. Can I have family members? Can we do? I think there was a suggestion. There was actually a suggestion of the sandwich. Like, as I think you have the supervisor right at drop off and then at pickup, then the supervisor comes back. There was a couple of. And the judge refused, you know, because she wanted me to pay. She basically figures, you know, and if I can't pay, she would say, too bad you don't see your kids. That's your problem, you know,
right.
That's your choice.
Right.
And you know, the pressure, you know, set to fail. And so when I finally, it was, you know, the beginning of August, I happened to be in court because I'm trying to get this gatekeeper vacant, you know, removed.
Is that like a guardian?
I'm sorry?
Is that like a guardian?
Basically what it is that I'm permitted to file motions, order to show cause, petitions.
Oh, that's right.
I have to write a letter without the approval of the judge. But I had said, you know, I want to see the kids. You know, I haven't seen them. I've missed house. She, of course, was like, you're allowed to see them. Yes, you know, blah, blah, blah. And she then stated, and I don't know what made her change her mind or why she said this, that, well, you know, my ex-husband is going to pay for these visits. And I go, well, when was that discussed? Because he kept denying it. Is there a court order? you know, can you write a court order saying that he has to pay for the visits? And she's like, no, just you know, order a transcript. Of course, she wants me to order a transcript because, you know, you have in Supreme Court, you get a transcript. It costs a couple of $100. So instead of just simply mm-hmm. writing an order that I can print out easily and have this order in my hands for free, she wants me to buy a transcript, you know,
Wow.
And so I'm like, okay. So now I'm like, great. Now I have this proof. I can maybe, hopefully I can figure something out, start seeing the kids. And, you know, unfortunately, like I said, we don't have a parent coordinator or anyone like that middleman. And so what I've been trying to do is communicate or contact his attorney saying, you know, okay, this is what was stated, you know, on this day, the judge said this, I want to start seeing my children, you know, please advise your client to have the children available. And, you know, she's denying it. She'll say, no, he's not paying. Please stop. Leave me, you know, she'll, you know, make these comments that, oh, you're harassing me. I'm not harassing her and I'll never stop. And I basically wrote right back to her saying, are you asking me to stop fighting and trying to see my children? You know, no, I will never stop. So you're going to get these emails and like you said, file a contempt, but I don't think I'll get anywhere if I try. I mean, I should just do it just for it to be on the record. But,
yeah,
you know, yeah. I mean, that would be my next step because, I mean, she's now denying visits. You know, she's now the attorney's getting involved and she's the one who's, you know, denying my visits. So, yeah, I'm going to have to do something. That was my next step, but. What I'm worried about is going back into court because this is what happens. It's and who knows, maybe the attorney, this is what the attorney wants to happen. I file a contempt, we go back into court, and the judge gets angry, and she court orders me to pay for this, or, you know, October 1st is coming up, so she'll, you know, my husband probably doesn't want to pay, you know, so he's probably like, let's try to get back into court, you know, before then so I can court order, ask the judge for, you know, to remove some more maintenance, you know, to pay me maintenance, you know. I believe it's a trap.
Well, is it also on Zoom?
No, the judge will ask for it to be in person. She's been asking for in person.
I think it's a trap, meaning
we'll go in there. And the judge will punish me, you know, oh, you filed this, there was no reason for you to file. Like, she'll do something, and she'll put me, you know, she'll do something to punish me. Every time I go in court, I get punished. I'm told to pay for something. I have more access to my children removed. You know, like I said, she just ordered a no contact with the doctors now, and, you know. So every time I try to, you know, go back in, she'll do something to hurt me.
Let me ask a silly question. What happens mm-hmm. if these mothers don't comply? Like, I haven't complied really to anything. And I don't mean anything, meaning this is how it's going to get done and how are we going to come to an agreement here? Because as mothers, I don't think we need to compromise. Oh, that's okay. Let me put a little less food on the table for my kids. Let me not get them school supplies. Let me not let them, you know, go somewhere at 6 o'clock because I have to worry about, you know, if I have a car, if I don't. Let me worry about this. Why do we have to compromise? What's the judge? I got put on mute today from the judge, which I kind of chuckled. But
I get put on mute all
yeah,
the time.
I got muted today. And so, but I did get in what I needed to get in. I was just kind of rambling at the end because I just wanted stuff on the record.
I would have been chatting in the box. I would have been writing in the, there should be a chat box on there. I would be writing
yeah.
stuff like crazy and blowing it up.
Yeah. So what makes us feel like we have to, Because I, you know, I'll compromise, but when you compromise, and even in business negotiations, it has to benefit both parties to some extent. And a lot of women feel like, oh, I have to do this. Like the same thing with transcripts. I'm not paying for freaking transcripts. I applied for poor person status for the appellate court. They tried to deny it, his attorney. Sonny helped me again. We went back again for a month and a half, and then finally I got it. 2,000 L's worth of transcripts for the trial I got for free. You know, when
that
we,
won't happen
when
with
we,
this judge. This
when
judge
we get
is
pushed,
like,
when
sorry.
We get pushed in a corner, our first thing is always, you know, oh, I'm not going to be able to see the kids, or I'm not going to be able to see this. Okay, so alternatively, what happens? They're going to start going
That's
after
right.
you and chipping until you cow down.
Right. Mm-hmm. Sandra's right, too, because the way I got access back to my children was somewhat my own intelligence, but God and pure luck. I owned a building down the street from my ex's house. And, you know, yours are more grown at the time. And they just marched their little bodies down to come see me. And the lesson from that is we're all gaslit to an extent, because why do we think we need to rely on the court to solve all of our problems? Sometimes you just need to think outside of the box and put yourself in a situation that brings your children to you.
Well, that doesn't really
work for
everyone, unfortunately. I mean,
you know,
look at Lucy.
My children did that.
If you have a restraining order, that's different. But actually, I was supposed to be under supervision. But the fact that the father was letting the children come see me was 100% means to end the supervision, because he's consenting to let them see me. That's his own admission that I'm a safe parent, because otherwise he would be a bad parent letting kids come see a bad parent. So father letting the kids come see me was the judge's reason for ending the supervision.
There was a handful of times that I was unsupervised. I remember there was, and there was, my ex didn't even want me to go watch my children's, you know, games. And in the beginning I was able to, and then he eventually kiboshed that. Took that away. But when I was going to see my son play soccer or my daughter play soccer, whatever, I was unsupervised. Now, I never went alone. I don't trust him. I always had someone with me, a friend or whoever it was. Why was it that, you know, there was a few times, you know, around the holidays that I was unsupervised? That was okay, you know, but
yeah, but document those. Document those, preserve those, and use those in your motion to end supervision. They're corrupt
just,
and they're going to do what they do and want to abide by the predetermined narrative.
What I'm telling you, this judge is fucked.
But Bailey, you know how bad my situation with the corruption is too, right? And
yes,
at some
but
point,
this judge has never been. She has never, she's untouchable.
Even with these untouchable people, when you put so much before them, sometimes they have to rule in your favor. You know, when you put so much before them,
I agree.
On the record, sometimes they have to do something.
I agree. You just got to be the biggest pain in the ass. Use the expression.
And you know what?
Just,
she'll put her in jail. She'll find a way to lock her up.
Well, I've been...
Just like
well,
they did to Lizzie.
That was every time I tried to, you know, challenge her or, you know, like you said, be persistent or whatever it is. that's what was happening. She kept threatening me to put me in jail. She kept shutting me out. Like, you know, she actually even filed, she actually put an order that I was to go to jail for 3 months, that I would have to go to jail on the weekend. But she was suspending it for 6 months.
I endured all that too. But remember, at some point, you will have maximized all their tricks in the bag. Just keep being strong and keep, every time they try to knock you down, every time they try to threaten you, every time they scare you with jail, you get back up and you keep going. And eventually they're going to realize, we tried every trick. She's still here. We got to start doing something.
It's a form of intimidation. It's a form of intimidation.
It's abuse and corruption. And,
it is abuse.
You know,
it's psychological abuse to my children and to me. It's legal abuse. It's just abuse. Yeah. And
you know,
how she gets away with it, I don't understand. But I also wanted to mention that there was actually a petition to have this judge removed off the bench. They had over 1,000 signatures, but, you know, this petition was denied. So that just tells you, I mean, a lot of people, you know, it's funny. I talk about my case now. I'm even to the politicians, I tell everyone my story, and people that live here in Rockland County, and they'll ask me, what judge do you have? And I'll tell them, and they're like, yeah, we know. You know, like, they're aware. People are aware of it.
The problem is that, like I said, you know, Antonella should go through all the, you know, all the cases and reach out to all these people and let them come together and make a lot of noise. And they're scared.
That's a good idea.
They already
lost their kids.
But like Antonella said, she's already tried. And a lot of these people are scared. They already lost their kids. They already gave up. They already moved on or trying to. And it's painful, and they just gave up. You know, I have a very good friend.
Some of
those
children are aged
now. You know,
they don't want to relive it. They don't want to talk about it.
I have a very good friend that went through it. I mean, it's 5 years later. And, you know, there was only so much she could do, and she gave up. I mean, she did what she could, and she gave up. And, you know, only one out of her 4 children speak with her. And it is painful. It is horrific. And I watched her go through, I mean, I know her since I'm 16, 17 years old. You know, that's over 3 decades. And, you know, it's sickening. And this is a person I know personally, but I just know this judge, and that's why, I wrote The Untouchable Judge, and I know I've seen and I've watched horrific cases. And I believe a lot of them eventually will be uncovered because just they're not even embarrassed anymore in front of court watchers. They're not embarrassed, you know, to do the things they're doing with the guardian ad litem and the lawyers. And it's so obvious. It's obvious to anybody, even if I don't know the whole entire story when I watch a case. And I truly believe if the more people come together and start outing and filing complaints, eventually something may happen, okay? But in this case, this judge has been investigated by the FBI. Imagine the FBI she already has control over. So who do you go to above that? That's my point, and I'm not trying to discourage Antonella. She can, you know,
well,
you know, you can
continue doing everything you
can do. Yeah.
No, I was saying, you know, like you said, she has a lot of connections with judges, FBI, whatever. And that's why I'm like, you know,
maybe we need to, you know, we need to have new people, you know, people that don't know her personally, like just to come in into the community. Like, you know, election is coming up, you know, now we're trying to, you know, elect, because the people that are already, you know, in, you know, that are already, like, if it's a senator, I've reached out to, like, the senator, I've reached out to congressmen. They all say they can't help me, you know, they, because they have that relationship or connection with the judge. I'm always almost like, well, maybe we need new people. Maybe we need people that don't know that, you know, that maybe they hear our story and say, oh, wow, you know, this shouldn't happen. But unfortunately, with family court cases, they don't really want to get involved. You know, they'll deal with criminal cases. They'll deal with, you know, all these other things, but they don't, you know, you talk about, you know,
because they don't have the knowledge.
Family.
I don't want
to
involve.
They're not knowledgeable.
I've told this to Bailey. Her court watching program, they need to step it up, because it's not just about watching in court. The court watchers can file non-party witness affidavits to your case. They need to start doing that. And who cares about depending on the media? Because if you have court watchers going in and then they're filing their observations directly to your case, that's better than the media. And it's almost, in essence, if they're filing with their observation to the case, it's almost like you created your own trial by jury and you didn't wait for the court to give it to you. So not only court watch, but have people go in court watch and file non-party witness affidavits to your case. Give people the caption to your case so they can write up the affidavit, putting to the record if they applied to be a court watcher, if they were denied public access to the court, if the judge was discourteous or harsh in any way, if the judge is violating the constitutional rights. They, as court watchers, can say, hey, we have this concern. Why is the judge making this woman be supervised? Right. We don't see a reason to violate these fundamental constitutional rights. You know,
I was just out
starting to do
and then
that.
Better friend. I was just literally my friend who he's an attorney in Israel, but he lives here, and so he has a lot of legal, you know, attorney education. And he was saying that to me, you know. Exactly what you said, that having, you know, these court watchers, you know, file this non-party witness affidavit on your behalf. Because I had my last court appearance, I did have someone come in to be a court watcher, and my friend was just telling me, he's like, okay, well, he was there, have him file like an affidavit. We were just talking about this, and I said, oh, really? I'm like, you can do that? And he's like, yeah, a big help and maybe even a help for victims like us that, you know, because I don't trust the court reporters. I mean, so in Rockland County, and I don't know how it is in Florida or anywhere like in other states, I know in Staten Island, they actually record when you go to court, they actually record it. In Rockland County, we have court reporters who type, you know, they type.
Right.
I don't like that, because I was just talking to another friend of mine, and she's like, oh, she goes, what do you think? They don't, you know, present it to the judge and the judge makes her corrections. You know, I look at these transcripts and I read it, and I read such as, you know, this, you know, dash, 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 dash. There's missing words. I don't even know what I'm reading half the time. And I'm like, well, how accurate is this? Like, what am I, you know, saying? Well, no, the court reporter is supposed to stop you and say, can you please repeat that? So no, they don't do that. And she goes, and, you know, and then what do you think? Do you think, you know, they don't go to the judge or the law clerk and say, hey, you know, I have to write up this transcript. Is there anything you want to remove or you want to add? You know, who knows what they're doing? But, you know, I know in my friend, she has a case in Staten Island, you know, they actually record it.
We were fighting for last year in legislation.
Yeah, I prefer that. I don't know why different courthouses, you know, I don't know how
they don't want they don't want it recorded for a reason. I remember last year we got together, we tried to put together a bill for mandatory court reporting, and we called all the counties in all of Florida, south, north, west, east, and every single court, even the smallest courthouse, had the equipment, the plug or whatever it is, to do it. So it wasn't going to cost them anything, really. And the bill didn't go through. I mean, it was just ignored. But it's something we're going to be fighting for because it's in criminal court they do it. If they do it, why not in family court?
Yep.
Because family court is filled with corruption, and if it's recorded.
But even in Supreme Court, I'm in Supreme Court. They should still do it. That's a, you know, I'm even regardless if it's
well,
a matrimonial.
It's still a family court matter. And they don't want to be, because it'll get out there. You understand? It'll just get out there somehow. And the truth will be, they won't be able to deny it because the truth is going to be seen by everybody. So, because there's no reason not to want something if everything is being done by the book. So, you know, it's very frustrating. It's very, very frustrating when you watch these things. And again, Antonella, whenever you have, they may have in person and Zoom at the same time. They may want you in court, but there may also be a Zoom link. Have you noticed the last couple?
Not with me. But I know I've become a court watcher. I'm off in the summer, so I've become a court watcher. And I have friends, like I said, their cases are in Brooklyn, Staten Island, over there. And yeah, there's been times that they're there in person, and then they will allow people to log on, you know, get on. But I've noticed the last couple of times that I've tried to court watch, they won't allow us. And then there's times that they do allow us in, and then they'll say, well, we don't know if they're recording it. So we can't continue this case, and, you know, we need to stop what we're doing because we don't know if the court watchers, you know, on Zoom are recording.
Well, then they should have,
I'm going to tell you something else about court watching. That's about the case you're watching. It's also about helping other people. And when you help other people, you're doing that in the presence of other attorneys and people that appear before the judge on a regular basis. And you're going to build a reputation for yourself caring about people. And upstanding citizen looking out for other citizens' rights. As you start doing that, you're going to start making relationships in the courtroom with, like I said, attorneys, other judges, and now they're going to have to start answering to this judge, why is this judge treating you so bad? Because look at the things you do as an upstanding court watcher.
Happened with us. That we've used judges with the other judges saying, well, they've allowed us. What is your problem, basically?
Well, they have no choice. If it's an open court, they have to allow you in. Like, you know, Stacey has said, they allow them in, but they make them come into the courthouse to watch it on a screen. If you're in the courthouse, you can already go into the courtroom, which is ridiculous, you know, not to allow that. They have to let you in. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about if it's an open case. But what I was trying to say is, you know, judges can demand that you have your camera on, like that your video is on. You can't record if your video, first of all, you can't record. They can prevent you from recording a Zoom.
Yeah.
Okay? They can prevent you from recording. And nobody's going to sit there with their phone.
I think they mean like if you're recording with your phone, that's what they were saying. Like, oh,
right.
They could
so
be
they
with
can
your phone.
Request they can request your pic that you show your face.
Yeah.
Instead of just having, you know, your video off. It's really kind of hard to record something, at least a video. And we can record all we want. It's not admissible. It's illegal. We're not going to do anything that's going to get us in trouble. So that's just an excuse. They're just making an excuse.
No, I know. It is an excuse. I mean, because in the end, we should be able to record. Said they do it in criminal, you know, court. It should be recorded. You know, we should have the right to record. We are recording to protect ourselves because we don't trust everyone in the courtroom. Like, I don't trust, you know, I'll give you a perfect example. So in my appeal that's pending, the children were brought in chambers, and the judge said the only reason why I'm seeing the children is because they're asking to live with mom. And if I don't meet with them in chambers, the appellate court's going to ask me why I didn't do that. So that's the only reason. This is what she's saying. That's the only reason why I'm going to meet with the children. So now I have this. I'm perfecting this appeal, and I know that I had contacted the court reporter that was there when the children came in, and that I asked her. I said, "Can you please get a transcript of the in camera with the children, and please send it to, because I'm not allowed to get a copy. Like, please send it directly to the caseworker, at the appellate court." And then I get an email saying, "I don't trust these people. First of all, you know, I don't believe. Who knows if they actually do record anything?" But I get the email saying, we were told by the judge that I'm not allowed to do that, and that if you have any questions, contact the law clerk or have the caseworker contact the court. So first of all, I'm thinking, well, okay, was it actually recorded? I'm having this court reporter write up a transcript. Who knows what the judge is going to tell her to make changes, because I don't really know what was really – I mean, I'm sure I have an idea. I'm sure my kids were telling the judge, no, we want to live with our mom, because that's what they've been saying from day one. And then, you know, I contacted the caseworker, and I said, hey, did you figure out, you know, oh, yeah, everything is taken care of. Okay, well, can you tell me what's going on? Were you able to get the transcript? Were you not? Like, what's – you know, and I don't get a response, but recording something is for protecting us, our, you know, our constitutional, like our rights.
But all your constitutional rights are anyways being violated. So what's one more violation? They don't care.
I know.
Right?
But.
No, I'm saying you're doing the right thing, but I'm saying you're doing the right thing by requesting,
appeal. I mean, yeah, you know, when you said requesting the transcript.
Let me tell you, girls, some laws on recording in the courtroom, okay? I don't ever record something just to do it because I know it's my right. I pick my battles. I did one time record a hearing that was held off the record, but I protected my butt in doing so. And the things that I did to protect my butt was I filed an affidavit to my case saying that I object to the judge holding any hearings off the record, and I object to any conferences, et cetera, without a stenographer. And I put that to the record, and then the judge went and held another hearing off the record. So courted it, and there are protections for recording something when you absolutely have to do it. Don't do it just for exercise and for, you know, oh, it's my right. Do it when you have to do it. And so I protected myself by objecting to hearings off the record. USC 18, 1983 gives you the right to vigorously defend your constitutional rights.
It is your constitutional right to have a fair and accurate record of all court proceedings. So when you say to the judge, stop doing this, it's my constitutional right of due process to have a full, developed, and accurate record, you're holding hearings off the record, now you're given permission by the courts to vigorously defend your rights, which means you can recourse. There is a judiciary law. I don't know it off the top of my head. It's like sentence 2 of 7 something, and I can find it, says that a judge shall not punish as a contempt the production of a fair and accurate record. So that allows you to record that. That makes it impossible for the judge, well, not anything's possible, but makes it not possible for the judge to hold you in contempt or put you in jail for recording off the record. And there's one more law that supports you in doing that. I can't think of it off the top of my head, but 18 U.S.C. 1983 gives you the right to vigorously defend your constitutional rights. And then there's the judiciary law that they cannot, as punish as a contempt, the production of a fair and accurate record from a court hearing. So if you want more information on that, I can get it to you.
I think Stacey, you'll be able to help. I know you're so busy with Lizzie's case and your case.
Yeah, that would be a big help because my constitutional rights have been violated. I mean, I have no rights. Like, I mean,
yeah, I think you're really right for that federal injunction.
You have rights, but unfortunately this judge doesn't follow the law. She doesn't follow.
Right.
So, but if Stacey is able to help you a little bit, and you know, at least with what you've already filed on the follow-ups and whatever. And, you know, who knows? Maybe you'll be the one to break her. Who knows? I've seen too much with this specific judge that I don't know. Again, you know what? Like my show says, never give up. You know,
you
the only way to never give up is to keep fighting. And,
yeah,
you know, I fought and fought and fought until my ex was locked up, and that saved me from family court and saved me from having 50-50 custody or losing my minor child, you know. But I fought, and it was not pleasant. So, you know, I'm not going to say there's no hope, you know, because
can I, share,
I believe in
yeah,
God.
I want to share,
yeah.
I want to share a
We're already
story.
Over time, but yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. 2 minutes. 2008, I was pregnant. 2007, I was pregnant with my fourth, with Elizabeth. I was 42. I had her 6 weeks, 5.5 weeks early, and I was diagnosed with a real difficult autoimmune. And fast forward 3 years into it, we don't know what to do with you. I was dying. I was down to 100 pounds, sleeping 17 hours a day, bedridden. Wheelchair. I mean, I was a mess. Neuromuscular neurologist. I start digging. Only 500 in the United States. I saw 9. I'm not going to die. Really? You're telling me I produce a bad B cell. You can't fix me. I don't think so. Just keep going and going. And the thing of it is, and the reason I'm using this is you don't want to stop. And as much as it's, and that's a health issue. So that was life or death for me. And then I got in a clinical trial at Yale Medical Center, 12 other patients like me, and I'm on my 100th chemo infusion right now. I brought the drug into Buffalo. So if we choose that we can't do that anymore, if we can't do it anymore, that's a personal decision. If you choose to keep pushing and keep pushing, you will gather people along the way. And you have to not be intimidated, embarrassed, step it, you just keep going one step at a time. And sometimes it's overwhelming. Sometimes you just want to scream your brains out but one day at a time, and it's a little bit closer. That took me from 2008 to 2011. And here I am today. So those are the things we have to pass through now with the legal system, with our kids, and the unjust within the judicial courts, you know, in all the courts. So I just wanted to give that 2 cents.
Well, I appreciate all of you guys. I will connect Stacy and Antenna. I can connect all of you. I could do a tag or whatever.
Yeah,
or Antonella, you can look for Stacy. Actually, I invited you to the group. I can't find you, so it means you're invited. I actually forwarded two of Stacy's groups to you, and I could forward their pages to you, and then you could reach out to them. Stacy's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
She's been helping Lizzie in jail. I mean, who else could be filing all this stuff while she's locked up and she's still in solitary again? Stacy, is she still in solitary? Stace, did you fall asleep on us? I don't know.
Wonder if she got disconnected.
Anyway, no, I see her on. I feel bad. Lucy tried to call me a few times. She called me on Friday, and I was dealing with an emergency with my son, and I didn't know how the whole process works. I didn't really, I had to put in a credit card, and she was calling me back, and then she tried me again, and she tried me on the Sabbath, and I don't answer the phone, and I felt so bad, but, you know, hopefully she'll try me again and reach me, and I can talk to her, but I'm always trying to update and help Stacy
so
update
she's
her
out,
case.
So she's still in jail then, that she was trying to contact you
yes.
in jail, is that you? Yeah.
I did speak to her in jail once.
I just can't even. I'm telling you, they put criminals out on the street.
Yeah. No, her. But if you watch, if you go back 2 weeks ago, a few weeks ago, I did a show on her, on my page. If you look, and attached to it is so many things. If you want to see what's going on in her case, it is insane. This everybody's connected to everybody. Her husband, her supposed ex-husband is connected.
He's an attorney
all the way
too. To her ex-husband.
Yes, and he's his law partner is involved or in a relationship with the chief judge of New York that just had to step down because she's being investigated. There's a lot, and it's all out there if you Google. But we've been putting it together, and I kept attaching everything Stacy sent me to my show. So if you look, go back a couple of Tuesdays to the show, well, there was a lot of comments made and stuff, but anything and everything involved to her show, and you could listen to the show, but anything and everything involved to her case, she's in jail because, this judge is untouchable. Her ex is untouchable because he's got so many connections and power. But we're like 40 seconds over. So I'm going to thank Antonella
for having
my
me.
Guest. My pleasure.
You're welcome.
And I hope everybody out there listens to this show, you know, make your comments. Anybody in New York going through something like this, all you New Yorkers need to start connecting and, you know, fighting for your rights. And, you know, it's, like I said, power in numbers. I know in Florida we are working together as different teams and different organizations, speaking up, doing our thing. Again, we do court watches all over. You can reach out if you need a court watcher. I think it's courtwatchers.org.
Okay.
Or you can reach out to me on any social media that you can find me. I'm going to mute you guys, okay? And Stacy for calling in and taking another night to be on here. And Sandra, I welcome all you guys to be a part of my show anytime. And to my listeners, to Joe Kwok for giving me this Blog Talk Radio time. I'm forever indebted to you, and to Charlie for helping me go off on my own and be my own advocate and of my own voice. Thank you. And again, please never, ever give up. There's hope.
With a little
perseverance, you can get things done. Battle blind adherence that has conquered some. And nobody wants to know you now. And nobody wants to show you how. You can see light, 'cause no one can see.